Welcome to Managing Tech Millions, the podcast for tech professionals navigating the journey from high earners to confident wealth managers. Struggling with equity compensation decisions? Are you curious about turning your portfolio into a thriving, scalable business? You're in the right place. Master your millions, own your legacy. Join us each week as we uncover strategies, share actionable insights, and help you take charge as CEO of your financial future. Here's something most financial advisors won't walk you through: a complete map of every income asset category available to you. And the reason is because more than half of them aren't things that they're going to earn a management fee on. Most investors in the $1 million to $30 million net worth range are working with one or two income assets, but there are 15, and the ones that often generate the most yield are exactly the ones that never come up in a standard advisor conversation. I'm Christopher Nelson, and I've built my own income portfolio across these assets, and it's currently generating over $200,000 per year in tax-efficient income. In this video, I'm gonna walk you through every income asset available to you, what each one is, where it fits into a properly built portfolio, and how to think about reducing risk. But before we dissect each one, let's talk about how income assets actually fit into a properly structured portfolio. Because without that context, a list of 15 options is just noise. When I look at any portfolio, I see three categories of assets, not by asset type, but by purpose. The first is growth assets. These build your net worth over time, and appreciation is the goal. You're not counting on these for cash flow, even though some of them may produce a small yield. The next asset category is capital preservation. These assets are your safety net. These are things like cash, high yield savings, T-bills, money markets, low return, low volatility. Their job is stability and giving you access to dry powder. That leaves us with the one and topic of this video, income assets. The goal here is to generate reliable recurring cash flow without depleting the principal that produces it. Here's why this framing matters. Every vehicle we're about to cover lives in this income bucket, but not all of them belong at the same layer within it. Some are foundational level, some are mid-tier workhorses, some are high-yield plays you only touch after the foundation is solid. That sequencing is what separates a real income architecture from yield chasing. And I'll come back to it after we've mapped the landscape. Quick reminder, this is education, not advice. Learn the systems, don't just copy blindly. Before we break down the 15 income vehicles, two things I need to address. Misconception number one, income investing is bonds and dividend stocks only. That's one tier of a three-tiered system. There's nothing wrong with bonds and dividends. They absolutely belong. But if that's all you're using, you're not diversified within this category. You have two instruments that tend to struggle at the same time when interest rates rise. Misconception number two, high yield always means high risk. Often true, but the distinction is yield on capital versus return of capital. Some vehicles paying 15% are quietly returning your own money back to you while the principal depletes. That's the yield trap. But other vehicles generate elevated yields through legitimate mechanisms, private lending, covered call premiums, illiquidity premium. The income is real and the risk is knowable. The goal isn't the highest yield. It's understanding where the yield comes from. I'm gonna flag that for each category. Here's the framework that organizes all 15 income vehicles, the income ladder. Tier one is the foundation. For most people, this should be 30 to 50% of your income allocation. Stable, liquid, built to survive down markets. You can expect a yield range of 3.5 to 6%. These assets cover essential expenses even when the markets are ugly. Tier two, the core income holdings. This is often 30 to 50% of allocation. With these vehicles, we're starting to get a higher yield in the 6 to 12% range with moderate volatility. These will be the workhorses of your income portfolio. Now, tier three, this is high yield. For most people, this is 0 to 20% of their income allocation. And notice I said zero. Some people might have nothing here. And that's fine if their income needs are covered by tier one and tier two. These vehicles are yield enhancers at 12% and above. They're not the foundation. The sequence isn't conservative thinking. It's math. Build boring before exciting. You need your foundation before going after higher yield vehicles. Now, let's walk through all 15. I'm going to tell you what each one is, the yield range, where it fits into the ladder, and the key flag to know. Let's start with vehicles in tier one, the foundation. Vehicle one is high yield savings, money market, and T-bills. The most overlooked income assets in this range. You would be surprised how many people I talk to that have large cash positions earning nothing. High yield savings, money market, and short-term T-bills are currently paying 3.5 to 5% with near zero risk. And you have full liquidity. T-bills carry a bonus. The interest is exempt from state and local taxes. This is your cash working while you build the rest of the ladder. Vehicle two, tax-efficient bonds. High-quality municipal bonds today often yield about 3 to 5% federally tax-free, and in many cases, state and tax-free if you buy bonds issued in your own state. For someone in the 37% effective tax bracket, a 4% muni yield is roughly equivalent to a 6.3% taxable yield. Also, some newer bond and treasury strategies use covered calls to target about a 5 to 6% in combined interest and options income, with a mix of ordinary income and capital gains that can be tax efficient for many investors. Vehicle three is the dividend growth ETFs. These hold companies with long histories of paying and increasing dividends. Yields are usually in the 2 to 4% range, but the focus is on consistent dividend growth across recessions and market shocks, not maximum current yield. Many of the dividends are qualified, so they are taxed at a lower long-term capital gains rate from most other investments. Though not every dollar is guaranteed to be qualified, and actual tax rates vary by income bracket and state. Vehicle four, dividend aristocrat stocks. These are individual blue chip companies with 25-year plus track records of consecutive dividend increases. Similar yield profile to the dividend growth ETFs, but with direct ownership of individual companies. More concentrated risk than the ETF, but the dividend track records are among the most reliable in the public markets. This is base layer bedrock. Now let's dive into tier two, your core income holdings. Vehicle five is high yield dividend ETFs. Similar to tier one dividend ETFs, but optimized for current yield rather than dividend growth. Companies here may not have a 25-year track record, but they're paying more today. Slightly more volatile, more income. This is a natural tier two complement to your tier one dividend foundation. Vehicle six, preferred stocks. Preferred stocks are a hybrid between bonds and equity, typically offering around a 5 to 7% yield and good liquidity when accessed through diversified ETFs. They pay fixed or formula-based dividends that rank ahead of common dividends. So income is usually more predictable than common stock dividends, though it still can be suspended. Prices can be significantly affected by interest rate movements and credit stress, so they're not as stable as short-term bonds, but they can be an effective middle layer income workhorse for investors comfortable with their rates and credit risk. Then there's vehicle seven, REITs. This is how you get real estate exposure without owning property in traditional investments. REITs typically yield about 4 to 8% and trade with high liquidity on major exchanges. They must distribute at least 90% of taxable income, which helps support higher payouts, but most of these distributions are taxed as ordinary income rather than at qualified dividend rates. That makes REITs especially attractive candidates for tax advantage accounts like IRAs, since holding them in taxable accounts can send a significant slice of the yield to the IRS each year. Vehicle eight is private equity real estate funds, diversified across the portfolio of properties or real estate loans rather than a single investment. More diversification than a single syndication, but less liquidity than a REIT. Some have limited quarterly liquidity windows. Others are fully locked up for years. Yield varies greatly, but you should target total annual returns in the mid single to low double digits, with cash yield often around 4 to 8% once the fund is fully invested. Vehicle 9, MLPs. This is one that many people don't have on the radar. MLPs, which stands for Master Limited Partnerships, are primarily energy infrastructure businesses, pipelines, storage, and processing. Structured as pass-through partnerships, they typically offer around 5 to 8% yields with exchange-traded liquidity and often tax-advantaged distributions. But they come with additional complexity compared to an individual stock or ETF. This is primarily the K-1 reporting and the potential for UBTI if held in IRAs. That's a special type of tax. They're a middle-layer income tool for investors willing to understand the mechanics before investing. Now let's move to the top layer, which I'd recommend making up no more than 20% of your income portfolio. Vehicle 10 is covered call ETFs. Covered call ETFs holds a broad or thematic equity basket, and they sell call options against those positions. The options premium create extra income on top of the dividends, often producing 8 to 15% yield and sometimes 20% plus. Some funds use index options that qualify for the 60-40 tax treatment under Section 1256, which can be more favorable than ordinary income. But the exact tax profile depends on the specific ETF. They're best thought of as top layer yield enhancers rather than core equity replacements. Now, a quick note on placement. Covered call ETFs typically live in the top layer, but for investors who already carry significant real estate exposure in their top layer, syndications, PE funds, hard money lending, moving covered call ETFs down to the middle layer can make sense. The income source is fundamentally different. Option premium income doesn't move with real estate. And diversifying by an income source type within your ladder is just as important as hitting your yield targets. Your ladder should reflect your full picture, not just a template. Vehicle 11, BDCs. Business development companies provide higher yielding loans and some equity financing to small and mid-sized companies, then distribute most of their taxable income to shareholders. Many publicly traded BDCs yield roughly 8 to 12%, driven mainly by interest and fees from their loan portfolios. This is amplified by some leverage. Distributions are generally taxed like ordinary income rather than qualified dividends, which makes BDCs strong candidates for tax-advantaged accounts where possible. Vehicle number 12, real estate syndications. Syndications are private investments where a sponsor acquires a property, raises capital from accredited investors, and operates it on their behalf. Cash-on-cash yield of 6 to 10% annually are normal, plus a share of appreciation at the sale. The trade-off is illiquidity. You're typically locked in 3 to 7 years. That's the illiquidity premium. You're being compensated for giving up access to your capital. Vehicle 13, private credit and hard money lending. Direct lending outside the banking system. This is where accredited investors get access to yields that don't exist in public markets. 10 to 15% from real loans being repaid and businesses generating cash flow. The risk isn't market risk. These don't move with the stock market. The risk is credit risk and liquidity risk. This has some of the highest yields in the landscape and require the most due diligence. Vehicle 14, royalties and IP income. This is music catalogs, patents, brand licensing. It's income uncorrelated to stock and real estate markets. The market is less mature and due diligence is complex, but it's a legitimate source of income worth knowing that it exists. And lastly, vehicle 15, annuities. Technically, they are income vehicles and an advisor may have pitched one. They can work in very specific longevity scenarios, but fee structures are often opaque, surrender charges can trap capital for years, and yields rarely compete with a properly built income ladder. For most people, this will not be a component of the income ladder. Now that you've seen all 15, here's how to actually spread risk across them, because owning more categories isn't enough on its own. Real diversification with income means five things. Diversify by income source type. Some income from equity markets, dividends, covered call premiums, some from real estate, some from private lending, some from interest-bearing instruments. When one source is under pressure, the others aren't necessarily affected. Two, diversify by liquidity profile. Not everything should be locked up in private vehicles, and not everything should be in liquid public markets. The liquid positions give you flexibility. The illiquid positions give you premium yield. You need both. 3, diversify by operator. In the top layer especially, you're not just investing in an asset class. You're investing in the people running it. A syndication is only as good as its sponsor. A private credit fund is only as good as its underwriting team. Never concentrate your top layer with a single operator, no matter how strong the track record. Spread across multiple sponsors, multiple funds, multiple managers. The asset class can be sound, and a single bad operator can still wipe out a position. 4, diversify by tax treatment. Some income is taxed at 15%, qualified dividends, some at ordinary rates, BDCs, REITs. Some is tax-free, municipal bonds. Some is tax-deferred, MLPs, return of capital positions. A portfolio that ignores this dimension is leaving real after-tax yield on the table. Where you hold each vehicle matters as much as the vehicle that you choose. Then there's 5, diversify by interest rate sensitivity. Some income assets benefit when rates rise. T-bills, floating rate private credit. Others get hurt, bonds, REITs. A ladder that's entirely sensitive in one direction creates vulnerability. Balance your rate exposure across the ladder so a rate move in either direction does not destabilize your income. That's the map and the diversification framework. Now let's talk about how you evaluate any vehicle before you add it to your ladder. There are 4 questions I ask about every income asset. 1, what is the source of the yield? Real economic activity, lending, rents, dividends from earnings, or is it financial engineering? Both can be legitimate. You need to know which one you're dealing with. 2, what is the tax treatment? A 10% yield taxed as ordinary income and a 10% yield taxed as qualified rates are not the same investment. Account placement is one of the most powerful levers in this category. Most people never pull it. 3, where does it fit in the ladder? Foundation, core, or tactical? If you can't answer that before you invest, you're not building income architecture, you're just collecting yield. And 4, where does this fit within my income bucket allocation? Before you add any vehicle, know your target allocation to the income bucket and respect it. A great income vehicle that pushes you over your allocation isn't a good investment decision. That's portfolio imbalance. Say your target allocations are 55% growth, 10% capital preservation, and 35% income. If you're already at 35% income, the answer is no to any new income vehicle, regardless of how attractive the yield looks. Rebalancing comes first, new positions come second. Those 4 questions filter out most bad decisions before you can make them. Now, if you have $1 million to $30 million in investable assets and you're ready to actually implement this, not just understand the landscape, but build the architecture, I would love to have you in our next live workshop. It is a 2-hour deep dive on the architect phase of setting up your own microfamily office. You will walk away with a legacy statement, an investment thesis, and a portfolio structure tailored to your goals. At the time of this recording, we've had over 1,600 people just like you come through this workshop. Head to wealthops.io/go or click the link below this video to register. Our next workshop is likely in just a few days. Now, after you sign up, check out this video on microfamily office structure that we go into on the workshop. Let's keep building.